Welcome one, welcome all to Bridging the Gap, an audio series featuring conversations with super interesting people from all walks of life who share one thing in common, the love of great music. Bridging the Gap is brought to you as a part of Chicago Acapella's 2020-2021 season. I am Joe Labazetta, and I'll be your host for today. Catherine Camp, who has been hosting most of our podcast episodes, has left very large shoes that I will endeavor to fill. She will be back for future Bridging the Gap episodes. Today, I'm speaking with my friend Gustavo Mejia. Gustavo is a Honduran-born, up-and-coming chef who got his start in Colorado and is currently working as chef de partie at a Michelin-rated restaurant right here in Chicago. Gustavo, welcome to Bridging the Gap.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's so good to have you with me. Thank you so much for generously sharing your time and your experience with us. I think your background is fascinating. I think a lot of Chicago Acapella listeners would be very interested to hear about your culinary career and about the restaurant industry in general. First of all, as I introduced you, I mentioned your job title is chef de partie. Now that sounds very French and very fancy, but I don't really know what it means. So could you explain what the position is and what makes it different from other chef positions? Maybe you can tell us what your kitchen is like, how many people are working in there. Just give us an overview of your kitchen and the different chefs that work there.
Yeah, absolutely. So as a chef de partie, I'm in charge of a particular station. Depending on the kitchen, there might be several cooks, you know, or commis who come in early in the day and they get things started for us. Later on the day, I would come in and I would check in with them and see where we're standing with the prep and how the station is set up. And as we get ready for service, I personally started as a commis and I worked myself into a chef de partie position. You know, as you grow, you get moved around into different stations, allowing you to be exposed to other areas that you might not know a lot about, you know, unless you're there, you know. And once you learn your way around the kitchen, other opportunities come along and you move up from there, you know.
Okay. So it gives you a chance to really get to know all the different parts of the kitchen and how the restaurant works.
Absolutely. You know, there's multiple kitchens, multiple stations in the kitchen.
Okay.
And, you know, knowing them and learning how they work is what allows you to move up the ladder, if you will.
Sure, sure. Of course. Now, your restaurant, as I mentioned, is a Michelin-rated restaurant. And I understand that Michelin ratings are very highly sought after. I don't know how many there are in the country. I mean, it's got to be less than 100 or so.
Yeah, for sure.
And and getting a rating indicates an extremely high level of excellence, right? The best of the best.
Exactly, yes. So, you know, pretty much they focus on selected restaurants from all different parts of the world. You know, they put a stamp in their excellence in techniques or execution of a classical or creative cooking. You know, it puts up-and-coming or already established restaurants in the spotlight, you know, for everyone to know that there is something special going on here.
Okay. Now, I have to admit, a few years ago, I was curious about the Michelin name. I was thinking, Michelin, is that the tire people? The Michelin tire company? So the Michelin tire company was interested in getting people to go travel, to take their cars and to go travel to places. And so they came up with this idea of giving ratings to restaurants to get people to go visit the restaurants and to drum up the idea of travel by car. This was probably 100 years ago or so. So did you know that was the history behind the Michelin rating?
Yeah, I mean, as you get involved in this industry and you do some digging, you know, you want to you want to be as informed as you can, you know, you want to see where the titles come from and the structure and, you know, how is has developed since then, you know, which is, since you put it, it's actually a very interesting story, you know, from selling tires to awarding one of the biggest names that you can put out there.
Yeah, funny how those things come together like that. All right, before we go much further, we should come clean to our audience. You and I know each other, but it's only been for a little over a year or so. Do you want to tell that story about your introduction to Chicago, how you ended up here, how we know each other?
Yeah, for sure. So as I was looking for a place to stay here in Chicago, my girlfriend Maggie, who also worked in the industry while living in New York, and is also a great baker, by the way. You know, she has worked for another house, but she does some back of the house baking herself, you know. But she mentioned that her friend Gina had a brother who lived here in Chicago, and he could help us. So they immediately put us in contact, and we were able to arrange something.
Yeah,
and I actually arrived here. Yeah, I arrived here in January.
Yeah, that's right. So that was the first time meeting you. Well, actually, when you came out to interview for the job, and then when you started the job, you stayed with me and my wife Bridget while you got started until Maggie came and joined you, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think I was here just maybe a little over a couple of weeks before my girlfriend flew into town and we were looking for a place to stay.
Right, and Maggie, I hadn't met her yet until she came to visit, and I didn't know how good she was and how important baking was to her till I saw the tattoo of the measuring spoons on her arm.
Yes, the famous tattoo, you know,
yeah.
She, that's the first thing I noticed about her too when I met her.
It's a, you know, a good conversation starter, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is a perfect transition, a perfect segue into a song I want to play for us. This song is was performed by Chicago a cappella in September of 2002. On a concert program called Tastes of Paradise. And this is a song called Pie R Pie, composed by Malcolm Dalglish. And this was done before my time with the group, but I thought it was a terrific and very entertaining piece to highlight for this podcast. So here it is. This is Pie R Pie.
Taste. Now if the sun and the sky and the trees common, ginger common, honey and salt.
Come on, give me a break. You're not making pie. You're making fruit cake.
Fruit cake? Yuck!
Take a roll in pee. Take a roll in spot. Turn on the oven. It's getting hot. And break that butter.
And boola boola, stamp and bam.
Boola boola, stamp and bam.
Put it in a pile. Put it in a clump.
Clump. Push it, push it, and put it in a lump.
More flour. Set it out again.
Again and again. Push it, push it, with a rolling pin.
Roll it up.
But don't you fuss. And don't get mad now.
But only one way out of this fix.
What's that?
Ain't no big secret, no copyright.
Is that right? Stop doing it wrong, start doing it right. Improvise, do what you can. If at some potluck you left your pan, from this point on it's ad hoc.
Pick up the Bay Street, pop it and walk.
Pick up the Bay Street, flop it in a wall.
Pile that fruit, put a crust on top.
Pile that fruit, put a crust on top.
Put her in the oven when the oven is hot.
Put her in the oven when the oven is hot.
Fire up 10 minutes or so.
Fire up 10 minutes or so, then turn it down.
But not too low.
Let it bake. When does that went in? Your nose blows when it's al dente.
When
they sigh, smell the tree, smell the sky.
People get hungry, people get mean. They don't want to wait for home cuisine. Chop it at the bit, right from the start. When are we going to get to the good part?
Yeah!
When are we going to get to the good part? Time to be.
Let all those suckers sit and drool. Say yak yak, just you wait. In a little while,
they'll be licking them late.
They'll be licking them late.
'Cause pie on square, it ain't no lie. When men are men and pie.
Pretty fun, isn't it?
I like it, yes. I like pie, I have to say.
I do too. And I think the fun thing about that song, there's clearly some visual aspect to it that's going on stage. Makes me wish I had been there to be more in the know. But even without the visual, it's pretty fun. So back to you, Gustavo. I want to ask you how you got started in the restaurant business. What was it that made you realize that this is what you wanted to do, that you had a passion for this?
Well, I consider myself a big foodie, you know, and I do eat a lot. And, you know, I'm actually not a big guy, so I'm lucky to be able to eat a lot and, you know, still maintain, you know, a figure of, you know, some size. But I like trying all different types of things, you know. I like eating and trying new things. And when I eat something that I really like, I'm quick to want to learn how to make it for myself, you know, and be able to share that with somebody else.
Okay.
And since I was a kid, as I grew older, I wanted to know how to make everything I enjoyed eating, you know, but it wasn't really like a career, you know, it was just a kid, you know, it was simply curiosity. If anything, you know, growing up, my dream was to be like become a professional soccer player and be playing a World Cup someday, you know, but, right. You know, as I came to the States, one of my first jobs was actually in the industry. And I was a dishwasher, and once I entered, you know, the food industry, I was introduced to such an amazing world that, you know, I knew nothing about. And that's when I began to do some digging and discover the culinary world and how big it actually expands. And so, you know, it simply took over, and I said, you know, one day I want to be a pro at it. You know, I want to be exposed to all the different levels that exist. You know, I want to experience it all. You know, being so far away from home, you know, food allows me to bring back memories, you know, just like music does, you know, and it can also help create new ones. And I think a lot of people can relate to that.
That's so true. What you say about memory and smell and food and music, the senses, I think that is so cool. That you kind of had an entry level job, and it was after that you realized you had this passion for the culinary world, and that's where you started to take off, and now you're working at a very prestigious restaurant. I think that's such a great story. So if I can take you back to a year ago, you had just started your new job at this prestigious restaurant. You're very excited to learn a lot and get right into it. And it was just a few weeks later, wasn't it, that the COVID pandemic took hold and totally changed the world and specifically your industry. So how did it affect your work and how your restaurant operated?
Well, yeah, as you said, you know, it was early March, if I recall, and the pandemic hit and everything was shut down. You know, it was really nerve-wracking, you know, because obviously, you know, that wasn't part of my plan or anyone's plan, you know, and I had only been working for a month prior to the pandemic, and suddenly the whole world came to a stop. You know, there were multiple sleepless nights that eventually followed, but within hours of finishing my last shift, it was a Sunday. I remember leaving at work. It was really late at night or early in the morning. It was like 1 a.m. when I left. And normally I would walk home, you know, just to save a few bucks on my way there, you know, since I was Ubering there. And I remember as I was walking home, the entire town seemed deserted. You know, I remember walking into the middle of the road and looking both ways, and there wasn't a single soul around. You know, I walked in the middle of the road pretty much the whole way home, and it was a very eerie feeling. You know, it felt like those scary zombie movies where the world is gone and I'm like the last person around. You know, it was a unique feeling for sure. So when I got home, you know, I got in contact with my girlfriend, and the following day or that Monday, you know, I bought myself a plane ticket and boarded a plane back home. And, you know, I met with my girlfriend and we immediately started like brainstorming different what ifs, you know, different scenarios. Like, what could we do? What are the options that we have? Are we going to go through with this? But we decided that we were going to go and plan to move to Chicago. You know, Chicago was going to become our next home. And while we were doing this within the same week, literally I had a chef call me and mentioned that we were going to start a to-go menu. And as far as I know, we were the only restaurant of his, you know, category or caliber, if you would, who was doing this.
Right.
You know, that this type of restaurant, you know, is the type of restaurant that is not really accessible to everyone. And, you know, it would not normally have a to-go menu. It's the kind of place that you really want to treat yourself to, you know, a special occasion, you know?
Right, of course.
But, yeah, but now we were making it accessible to everyone. You know, it allows people to bring a new dining experience home regardless of your cooking skills. And we made this possible while the world was shut down. You know, we went into production almost immediately. You know, that helped put a stamp on the decision that I was going to move to Chicago. And within weeks of the call, we were on the road. We packed our things, you know, all of our belongings, and we arrived. And the very next day after arriving, before, you know, I unpacked a single box, I went straight to work, and we were introduced to what would eventually become the new normal, you know, the new regulations that were in place for our health. You know, we were wearing masks constantly, you know, at all times, and gloves. We were tamped as soon as, you know, we are still tamped as soon as we walked through the door. But most importantly, as individuals, you know, we still follow the safety guidance on our own, you know, outside of work. It's been hard, but definitely a life lesson. And I think it just goes to show how resilient this industry is and everyone that works in it. It shows how the restaurants have been able to adapt their business plan and accommodate all the restrictions with this pandemic. And, you know, we all take it serious and we really want things to move forward in a positive direction.
That's very true. And I think it also shows how decisive behavior is important and how important it was for the restaurant to decide, okay, boom, we're going to switch to a takeout model that had never been considered before at all. I have to say, I was, and you were a beneficiary of this because, full disclosure, I've never dined at a Michelin-rated restaurant. But once your restaurant started to offer a takeout meal option, you called me up and you said, hey, let's do this. Let's have a meal together, you and your wife, Bridget, and me and my girlfriend, Maggie. You called me up and said this. And that was awesome.
Yeah.
We had this amazing Michelin meal and we were lucky to have you there to plate it all for us. So let's talk about that meal for a few minutes.
Yeah. So, as soon as it became, an option, you know, as soon as it was possible, I remember reaching out to you and my girlfriend, we wanted to, you know, do it, experience it, especially with you guys. And, it was a lot of fun. You know, and it did exactly, what the intention was, you know, when you're the chef trying to put this option out there is for during this time for people to, you know, have a reason to be at home doing something. You know, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, we enjoyed this great meal in your house. I remember that it was more than 8 or 10 different dishes, and you had a really nice patio, and we were enjoying them, all of them, in different areas of the house. You know, we had a few bites in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And you had like this nice record playing in the background, and then we moved out to the outside patio and we continued the day, and just, you know, it was nice.
Yeah, I think we were playing a record by Ojos de Brujo, a Spanish band.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. We love to listen to music while we're eating, and that was an important thing to have this really cool soundtrack while we were eating this world-class meal. So I will always have you to thank for that experience.
I was happy to share that. You know, it was like a good something good to do, because at the time prior to us doing that, all I was doing is like going to work, coming home, waking up, going to work and coming home. And you know, we were like, let's do that. You know, we weren't out there, so it was good to like grab something and come together and just have a nice meal.
Yeah, it was so fun. And speaking of music and food together, this is a perfect segue into our next song, also about food. And this is also a Chicago a cappella performance of a song called Chili con Carne. And this song was made famous by The Real Group, which is a Swedish a cappella group. And so I'm going to play a little Chili con Carne. Here it is.
Take some ripe and fresh tomatoes, put them in a bowl with oil. Add the onion, strong and tasty, on the stove you let it boil. Choose the finest meat you get, from cow or pig, it doesn't matter. Beans and jalapeno matters, necessary is to this. But don't forget the Mexican spices. Chili con carne, 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 one or two or three or four or seven beers will be enough. But don't forget the Mexican spices. The spices, the heart of your cooking. Oh, don't forget the Mexican spices. With love them, you won't get the flavor of sunshine. La 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 la. Chili con carne, chili con carne, chili con carne, chili con carne. Chili con carne, con chili con carne. Aha, let's make chili con carne, 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 chili con
Yeah, so I wanted to pick that one to feature on this podcast because it just had the right energy, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I love chili and it sounds really good right now with this weather too. You know?
That's right, something to kind of stick to your ribs.
Yeah, something warm.
So, but this song, speaking of chili, I want to talk about spices and spiciness in food. As you know, everybody has a different level of tolerance or affinity for spiciness. My mother, for example, has a very Irish palate and reacts very strongly to even the slightest hint of cayenne pepper or any kind of hot pepper. So my question to you is, how does a restaurant find the right balance in spicy dishes to satisfy their diners? It's a tricky thing to do, isn't it?
In the kitchen, you're going to have multiple chefs, you know, participating in the development of a dish. So almost all the time, or most of the time, your first take will never be right, you know. So you present the dish, and then, of course, you have your chef de cuisine and your sous chef, and they all, you know, taste it and give you an input, you know. And most of the time, you might think it's right and it's perfect, but somebody may say that it needs a little bit more acid, or it's too spicy, or, you know, it needs a little bit more sweetness to it. And, you know, and so it begins, you know, by the time the final product is presented, it has been modified and tasted multiple times by the chefs. And eventually, you know, you have the front of the house team who also gets to try it and give you an input before, you know, it's finally put out there.
Oh, that's so cool. So it's like I love how it's a collaborative effort.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's also educational, you know, because now everybody gets to see that mentality where the flavor or the inspiration for that dish is coming from.
Ah, so cool. Thanks for that insight. I really didn't know that part. You hear that music?
Yes.
No, that music is it's a sign. It means that there's a special feature coming on this podcast. It means we're about to get a special surprise guest joining us on our conversation.
All right.
You didn't know this.
I did not.
No, you did not. So the special guest, I'm going to try to get you to guess who it is.
Okay.
And so before I introduce this person, I'm going to give you three different clues. And I want you to try to guess who it is based on the clues, okay? So this person is someone with whom you have shared a meal, but someone who you have not cooked for.
Okay.
Okay. Does that give you any clue?
Yeah, I think I know who it might be.
Okay, here's another clue. This person really did not used to not like seafood.
Okay.
But now really likes seafood, but mostly the expensive kind, like caviar and crab legs.
All right.
You getting it?
I think I know
now?
Who it is.
All right, yes. Who is it?
Is it your sister Gina?
It's my sister Gina. Gina, welcome to the podcast.
Was that you calling me a snob?
No, I'm being honest here.
That's what I heard.
No, Gustavo, you're supposed to say, no, it just means she has excellent taste.
So this is great. I've never had both of you even in the same room or on the same call. So this is the first time the three of us are having a conversation together, and I love it.
Thanks. Well, hi, guys.
Yeah, welcome. So, Gina, I wanted to get you on the podcast because, not only do we have this connection with Gustavo, but since you worked in the restaurant industry, specifically with Maggie, at Eataly in New York, I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about Eataly. We have an Eataly here in Chicago. That's E-A-T, Eataly. And for our listeners who may not know what it is, could you give us kind of a general outline of what's the Eataly experience like?
Oh, the Eataly experience usually depends on how much money you have. but it is, it's a fascinating concept and was a new concept really to the U.S. When it first came out in New York. And it's basically a giant Italian food grocery store with various restaurants inside of it. So the way that the one in New York works is you have, or worked at the time that I lived there and worked there, had various, you know, themes to their restaurants. So they had Il Verdure, which was, you know, just their sort of vegetarian stuff, salads and other sorts of veggie sides. They had Il Pesce, which was their seafood stuff. They had pizza pasta, which is self-explanatory. And they had Manzo, which was the sort of higher end fancy steak restaurant, which is where I worked and where I met Maggie. And for me, it was actually a new experience because I had been in the bar industry for years and years and years, but I hadn't worked in sort of higher end dining. So this was a new experience to me, and it really taught me Italy's philosophy, which is slow food. You know, there's that sort of rush in America often, and there's that whole, the whole fast food industry is a giant industry, and Italy wanted to take America back to the traditional Italian slow way of preparing food and just bring you back to the joy of using, you know, good ingredients and preparing them with love and the traditional way of doing the things in the Italian world, and really taught me a lot about cooking in general. Especially with the use of my ingredients. Really, the philosophy that I learned there was the fewer ingredients, the better, as long as they're high-quality ingredients and you balance them properly. And that was really the biggest lesson I learned from Italy, along with the amazing friends that I made, one of whom is Maggie, and who remains one of my favorite people to this day, and introduced me to Gustavo.
So I think that slow-paced philosophy of eating and dining is probably antithetical to the New York City experience and the Chicago, and you know, the big city living, where we do move fast, and to kind of slow down and have a relaxed, luxurious meal. It's just kind of a nice comparison.
Yes, and Italy is really all about the courses. You know, you got to course out all your food. You start with a little something, and then you have a little greens, and then you have a little pasta, and then you have your meat, and then you have your dessert, and then you have your digestivo, and yeah, you could spend hours at a table, and I have.
So, Gustavo, did you get a chance to dine at Italy when you were there? When you visited?
Yes, Yes, actually, we went out there for Maggie's birthday, and Gina had everything planned out for us, I believe, with Maggie. And it, they were also exposing me to, for the first time, you know, I was going to sit down and had my first Michelin tasting menu, and it was thanks to Gina, who was able to, you know, pull some strings and actually gave us the opportunity to go to the kitchen and experience a different side of it too, you know, as a guest. I worked in the industry long enough to know what it's like to work in it, but it was definitely a first time for me to be in the receiving end of it, you know, to be at a table and be treated with that high level of, you know, responsibility that is given when you go to a place like that.
Do you think that gave you a special insight, or what, do you think that was important to your understanding and your development as a chef to experience it from that side of the table?
No, yeah, absolutely, you know, because like I said, you think about how it might be in the other side, but unless you're there, you're not really going to know how good it is, you know?
Right, right. I try to think about it like I'm a performer, so I tried to experience a performance from the other side, from the other, you know, from the audience perspective, when I can, not only because I enjoy it, but because it, you know, helps me, I think, work on my craft and get new ideas and, you know, admire what other people are doing in my line of work. So I definitely see a lot of crossover. There's one song I want us all to listen to. This is that we get to listen to three songs on this podcast. So this is a Chicago a cappella performance from a 2010 concert program. And this was also titled Tastes of Paradise. I referenced an earlier concert program from 2002. I guess the Taste of Paradise concert program was so popular, they decided to bring it back. So this song is called Cigarettes and Chocolate Milk, a song composed and originally performed by Canadian singer-songwriter Rufus Wainwright. So why don't we give this a listen, and we'll chat about it after.
La, 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 la,
cigarettes and chocolate milk, these are just a couple of my cravings. Everything it seems I like's a little bit stronger, a little bit thicker, a little bit hungry for me. If I should buy jelly beans, have to eat them all in just one sitting. Everything it seems I like's a little bit sweeter, a little bit fatter, a little bit hungry for me. And then there's those other things, which for several reasons we won't mention.
I love that song. Gina, have you ever heard Rufus Wainwright before?
I know Rufus Wainwright. I don't know that song, though. I'm curious about that combination and what prompted him to write that song.
Well, yeah, if you read the lyrics really closely, it's less about food and it's more about, small addictions and compulsions and how they kind of control our lives. And this is kind of like an ode to to these addictions.
To addiction.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you just heard that song, just listening to the music and the melody and the voice, I mean, doesn't it come across as kind of intoxicating even, or delirious? It's kind of,
it does,
it's kind of got this lazy, yes, swing to it.
I'm just sort of swaying back and forth,
yeah,
and enjoying it.
I was too, yeah.
Yeah, so I love Rufus Wainwright's voice. He's kind of got that easy, kind of lazy voice. I mean, lazy in a good way. It just kind of moves so easily, and I love to listen to it. And Matt Greenberg, who is our soloist on that, that recording, does a great job of channeling his inner Rufus. So I really wanted to feature that on this podcast. So, well,
I've enjoyed all the music you've
put
on there, and now I would really like some pie. So Gustavo, if you could have Maggie whip me up something, that would be great.
Absolutely, you know, and I'm craving chili still, so, you know.
And I guess that leaves cigarettes and chocolate milk for me. Well, this has been such a wonderful conversation. I want to thank both of you. Gustavo, thank you so much for giving us a little peek behind the scenes of a Michelin restaurant. It's been so great getting to know you.
Absolutely, Roger. I really appreciate you having me here and giving me the opportunity to share, you know, a little bit about myself. Thank you so much.
That's great. And I can't wait to get you to a Chicago a cappella concert. We haven't been able to do anything since you've moved to Chicago. So that's next on our list.
Absolutely. I'm ready.
All right. Gina, Gustavo, thank you so much.